Hello there, welcome to your next mission video podcast. Empowering veterans as they transition to civilian life is something we talk about in the show quite a lot. Our guests today take this concept to a whole new level by cultivating teamwork, discipline, and confidence. Their two nonprofit organizations equip veterans to navigate their next chapter with purpose and community. You won't want to miss just how they do this and the journey they recently undertook that pushed them to their absolute limit. So please stay tuned for this powerful conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Video Podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all our veterans and service members and families for your service to our great country. Now, before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USAA, whose mission is taking care of the military community and their families always. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. Say it every week, we love them too. Today, we're talking about the physical challenges a group of veterans faced when they laid it all on the line for their fellow veterans. And I'm excited to welcome Michael Kendall, president and founder of No One Fights Alone Foundation. And he's also a Master Sergeant retired from the United States Army, and Christopher Farrington, Chief Operating Officer of the Courser Racing Foundation, and a Sergeant First Class retired from the United States Army. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Sergeant Major.
Hey, well, I'm glad we got this far. Hey, look here. Before we get started and do anything else, I want to hear your story because it's really an interesting story. Would you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself, and Michael, we'll start. It'll take about a minute or so. Tell the audience just a little bit about you. Michael, we'll start with you.
All right, Sergeant Major. So as you said, I did 21 years in the military, 5 years in the 75th Ranger Regiment, jumped over and did another 17 in Special Forces. I served time at both 10th Group, WIC, and then third group, with finishing my time up at third group. As soon as I got done and retired, I went overseas, worked over in the United Arab Emirates for about 9 years. Then I came back, went in, puttered around, not really happy with what I was doing. I went into emergency medicine, worked as an EMT. It was really long hours, go nowhere type job, and ended up getting the opportunity from another Ranger who was looking at putting together a team to race across the Pacific, and that's how I got involved initially with Range Horse Row.
Yeah, wow. Well, hey, Chris, how about yourself? Tell the audience just a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, Chris Farrington. I was in the Army for 21 years, just retired 3 weeks ago. I spent most of my time at 5th Special Forces Group as a Special Forces Weapons Sergeant. Started the retirement process, kind of my team kept going one way and I was doing the retirement thing. Kind of felt a loss of community and a loss of purpose. And luckily, this ocean rowing adventure came my way, and I just had to jump on it, and it's been absolutely amazing.
Well, I've looked a little bit about what you guys have been doing, and it scared me when I started looking at that, just thinking about what you guys did. Hey, to set the stage, Chris, please tell us about the recent journey you took to raise money to support our veterans.
Sure. We rode from Monterey, California to Kauai, Hawaii. It's about 2,800 miles of just manpowered, rowing a boat through 30 to 40 foot swells, rain, winds, bad currents, flying fish hitting us constantly, you know, blisters on the hands, all the whole gambit. And we did it for suicide awareness and suicide prevention. We raised money to the tune of about $80,000 to give to other organizations that help with this endeavor.
Are you going to do it again? You plan on another trip? Another trip? same area? It's going across the same thing again?
No, we'll be crossing the Gulf of America in January, which is about 1,100-mile trip. And we're, to our knowledge, no one has done it before. We've reached out to all the powers that be for Ocean Rowing Society, and it hasn't been done. So we're going to go ahead and commit to that in January. And then we're going to be rowing again across the Atlantic, which is a 3,000-mile journey, in December 2027.
I think I could maybe do a quarter of a mile. I don't know if I could do any farther than that. But, hey, Michael, how did you even, I mean, I can't even fathom. How do you prepare a trip like that?
It takes a lot of that intestinal fortitude. I don't believe any of us knew what we were really getting into. We were going off a lot of the advice from other rowers that we've met on the way. I'd like to say Paul Lohr inspired us and was a true mentor from start to finish. But even all his knowledge, until you actually get out there, Sergeant Major, and take on that 2,800 mile, you don't know what you're going to encounter. And every day seemed to be something new.
Yeah. I'm just, as you're talking, I'm thinking about things I don't want to do, and this is one of them. I'd probably be too afraid to do it. Hey, Chris.
We hear that a lot, actually.
I'm sure. You probably hear the both sides, ones that don't want to do it. Then you probably hear the other side that says, hey, look, I'd love to do that. Are you going to do it again? How do I get involved in stuff? Hey, Chris, please tell us about some of the things that you experienced in your initial days of rowing. I don't know, 28 miles. I know you worked shifts and you rotated shifts. Could you tell the audience just a little bit about all the stuff that, you know, that you encountered when you was out there?
Yeah, sure. I think the most unexpected thing that happened to us was the initial launch and the emotions that came with that. I was talking to one of our other teammates yesterday about this, actually, and it's probably the closest thing that you can get to being overseas in a combat zone, knowing you're about to go into the hornet's nest and you just have to go. And so that same emotion got evoked into all of us, was just like, we're going to hell and back and we're just going to get it done. And so that was very powerful for me. And then, man, once you're in it, it's just a slog. It's 2 hours on, 2 hours off the entire time. So you're rowing for 12 hours a day and resting the best you can for 12 hours a day, eating as much as you can during your rest breaks, cleaning yourself, and then just dealing with the elements as they come. You're on a rowboat, can't do anything about your situation, honestly. So the first week just was, you know, just really hard for, I think, the whole crew. I think all the boats out there, because the Arctic winds push down the California coast down to Mexico, and you have to fight across them. You can't go with the wind. So you're just getting blasted by BMCs for, you know, 7 to 10 days, depending on the crew. For us, it was 7 days, thankfully. But yeah.
Was you all by yourself? That was just you by yourself, correct? And wasn't a couple other boats with you, was there? No.
So we raced against three other boats. Their own causes that they campaigned for and stuff like that. They say race, but really it's just getting as many boats
campaign
on there.
Yeah. That's way to describe it.
Well, yeah. So you said you had five people on the boat, but tell me the sleep plan here. How you slept, or did you sleep? Go ahead.
Yeah, just you know, there's two tiny cabins, and they can realistically fit one person in there, two people if there is a storm and you have to hunker down. No AC, no ventilation, because they have to be watertight, just in case the boat rolls over. So you get done with your row shift, your partner opens the door, you guys high five, and you just get in there and just pass out in this little cabin that's about 130 degrees and absolutely soaking wet.
I would imagine, though, you probably didn't get more than, 2 hours of sleep at any given time?
Yeah. 2 hours at most.
Was that the plan? Now, I know you had a fifth person. Mm-hmm. So how did you rotate that fifth person into the rowing schedule? Micah, you may want to take either one of you. Go ahead.
So, as Chris was saying, we have two cabins. The front cabin's a little bit larger than the back cabin. So, Chris and the skipper would be in the back cabin, and they rotated every 2 hours. So as they came out, it would be Jer and Chris would pull the first 2 hours, and then at the end of their 2 hours, the skipper would relieve Chris. It was offset just a little bit. Chris would go into the back cabin, the skipper would come out, and then maybe 20 minutes later, Jer would we would come out. One person at a time had to tap out with Jer, the rower. So it was almost orchestrated. I think I was always the first one out. I would tap out with Jer. Jer would be on standby. And then while JT, who's in the front cabin, because the cabin is so small, only one person could change and get ready to go out on shift. So he would almost stand by. And once JT was done, he would tap out with Jer, who was waiting just outside the door. And they would orchestrate, rotate out. There's a lot of safety lines, when I say orchestrate, that go into this of unclipping, reclipping, so that if a rogue wave does come at any time, nobody's going to get washed overboard.
Yeah.
Jer would go in, shut the door. JT would get into his row position, and we would row three on for 2 hours. And then we would just reverse that with when Jer would come out, or vice versa, when the skipper and Chris were coming back out on shift. So it's very orchestrated, very dangerous, but we made it happen.
Yeah. It's probably a dumb question. I guess you all wore life jackets all the time, 24 hours a day.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
No.
There's no reason to be safe anyway. So
yeah. You had a belt and a lanyard that hooked onto what we call stay jack lines. And once you got out on deck, you clipped in, and you had to be clipped in outside at all times. It was like ranger school. Everything had to be tied down.
Yeah. Well, you guys, I know you guys don't get scared about anything, but was there any time during that entire trip that something that just said, oh, man, we're in a bad situation right now?
Oh, yeah, night
day five.
Yeah.
What happened on day five?
I think it was the first time that we seriously got bashed by waves, and they were higher than, 12 feet from where you're sitting doesn't look as bad out in the middle of the ocean, but 40 feet's pretty ridiculous. I get on to my shift. It's middle of the night. You can't see anything. There's no loom pretty much the first 2 weeks. And you
cold,
just
cold, miserable, and wet.
Yeah. You could just hear it's crazy outside. And the boat, it's just all over the place. So my rope partner was sick from something, and he needed about 30 minutes to kind of, try to get it out of the system. And about 5 minutes into that, I was like, brother, you got to go wake up JT and get him out here. I can't do this alone right now. And you just got sucked to the bottom of the boat as the waves picked it up. And then, that continued on for like 3 days. And I mean, at one point you're looking up at a four story wave, and then next thing you know, you're looking down in four stories. And luckily, we never, you know, capsized or got a knockdown.
We almost came. You weren't. Yeah, two times we hit. I call it the 70% mark,
yeah.
where the boat shifted almost 70% while they were sleeping. Like we were looking straight down at the water, using our oars to try to rewrite the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And both times that happened on my shift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, you guys told me during the prep call, how many miles did you try to row a day? I guess I could figure it out, but based on,
our goal was, and correct me if I'm wrong, we needed to be above 55 miles a day.
65.
The world's toughest row is wants you to be at 60 miles a day.
Yeah.
Or nautical miles.
Yeah, so we set our own goal. Every team does. Some teams want to beat the world record. Our goal was 35 days. We thought that was respectable. The average last year was 37 to 42. So I said, hey, let's try to come in under that. And we kind of stuck to 65 on average a day. Some days were better. We had 70s. We had 182, which was awesome. Yeah. And then we had one really bad day where the clouds finally left and we got our first real hot day, and that was 55. That was the first day that we got baked, I would just say.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the psychological aspects of such a task that, and then the bond that was probably formed between you guys. I mean, I probably got a lot closer with your teammates and stuff out there, because there's nobody else to talk to. So stay right there. We'll be right back. This is your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. If you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are, because I don't think I could ever row a boat for 35 days. I'd probably be screaming and crying, and they'd have to throw me off the boat. But please like us. Click on that subscribe button below, and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at purdueglobal.edu. And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with Michael Kendall, president and founder of No One Fights Alone Foundation, and Christopher Farrington, chief operating officer of the Courser Racing Foundation. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support the work we're doing on behalf of our veterans and families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning to get rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on the vehicle donation button or the home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Michael, I just can't imagine being on the ocean 35 days. How did you all handle a battle with you must have experienced, the mind, the body, the spirit, and all that other stuff that was going on. How'd you guys all handle that stuff?
Prior to actually heading out on the water, we worked with a really great woman, Vera Gupta. She put us through about a week of somatic training, some yoga, breathing, and I really do believe that that played a big part in getting us across the water mentally. And then, of course, Chris and Jared physically beat into us, getting us on the row machines and getting us in shape to do it. It's not something that mentally I really think you can prepare for. It's just like Ranger School or just going into combat. Every minute of every second of every hour, something could happen, whether it's an oarlock breaking, a water maker breaking, solar panels not charging, and it's being able to competently deal with the stressors and the situations at sea.
Yeah. I would think because you guys are both operators that you're used to working with small teams of people, you know, and that probably helped you, maybe gave you a little bit of advantage to, you know, while you're on the show. Hey, Chris, please tell us the names of the guys that were part of the team and the bonds you forged, experienced through the entire journey. I mean, I bet you grew some good friendships while you're out there, I guess. Or was all the people that were on the ship with you, on the boat with you, were they already good friends of yours?
Actually, I only knew one prior to who is also a board member on Courser Racing, but Mike, Jerry, and Roy, I had no clue who they were until we kind of bumped into each other at a boat show, and I ended up helping and rowing on the team. We had Roy Emerson, Jerry Hartman, JT Molinax, myself, and Mike, who were kind of strangers. I believe Mike didn't know Jerry. Jerry didn't know Mike. You know, it was kind of they were at a function for Three Rangers, kind of information got put out there. Hey, I'm trying to do this. Who wants to do it with me? And so everyone kind of came from everywhere and didn't really know each other too much.
Were they all retired military, retired Army?
Oh yeah, I was the only one that was still active duty at the time. Yeah. But everyone was retired. Everyone kind of was in different stages in their lives with retirement. You know, some were working, some were, you know, full not working. I believe everyone kind of got pulled in together for that same, I need purpose. I need a community. I'm kind of on a loss and all that. And, you know, so we already kind of came in with that attitude of like, I need this and I need you guys. And so once we got on the boat, that bond just got even tighter, especially dealing with other things, you know, having a guy poop right behind you in a bucket, that nothing brings you closer than that.
Well, yeah. I was telling Ted a little while ago, you probably have to be, hey, look, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Look the other way, please. You know,
you just don't care anymore.
Not so much that. I think it's when we're throwing the poop overboard.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but I knew that's what you had to do.
Oh, yeah. It would be so hot that, you know, you would just get full-blown naked. And it wasn't even, no one batted an eye. No one cared. It was just, I hope that guy's wearing a lot of sunscreen. Chris, you wearing sunscreen? Yeah, I just lighted up. All right, great.
who was a medic? I mean, you guys got medical training anyway in the Army, but you was a medic?
Yeah, Mike was officially
pretty much,
a medic.
Because being a former EMT, it just sort of fell into my lap. So I took care of them. I mean, other than some basic band-aids and sunburns, we didn't have to tap into anything for anything really serious.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for both of you now. What's the two things you really got out of this trip? Two things, you know, and I guess the second question is, how involved was your families in this whole process? Because they really got to buy into what you're doing here. 35 days. I mean, because there's a lot, you know, we were joking about this a little bit, but there's a lot of risk to doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So first one is first two things, you know, I'll ask Steve Brent, and then I want you to tell me what your family thought. So Chris, I'll start with you first. What's two things that you, uh, you know, really got out of this?
So for me, I got a new sense of purpose and a new drive in what I want to do in my next chapter after retiring. For, you know, I didn't even start the transition period because I was, you know, doing all the stuff to actively retire. But I could see the writing on the wall that, you know, I was in danger for a lot of different reasons. Squared away my military career, but then, you know, when that's done, it's like, well, what's next? And luckily, you know, I started this and met some great guys along the way. So I think above all else, you know, I've got a real good focus and, you know, a sense of purpose for doing this. And then, yeah, just the, you know, the guys I met along the way, the people that I've helped, you know, that it's one of the things I did not expect was me rowing the ocean actually helped friends of mine out that were struggling, who, you know, have been out of the Army or retired or, you know, ETS or whatever, that were going through a hard time, and just seeing the stuff that I did, it actually helped them, which I didn't, you know, I didn't think me going out in the ocean and doing this crazy thing would affect other people in that way, but it has, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah, they probably followed you all the way through in this. You know, one thing I'll say real quick here, that was probably a form of therapy for you out in the ocean.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
for
just
sure.
Sort of bonded with all these guys. Michael, same question. What's the top two things that you got out of your trip?
The first one, same as sense of purpose and direction.
Yeah.
I was, as I told you, I was working EMS 12 hours a day. I was depressed. Having marital problems at home. I mean, the list goes on. We've all been there, still fighting demons and not getting that help that I really need or needed. And so it gave me a sense of purpose, and it's actually opened a new chapter with No One Fights Alone and moving forward and help continuing to help veterans and expanding it to the first responder organization. For family, my wife, again, I it's one of those, hey, I signed up or threw my hat into the ring, not thinking I was gonna get selected, not even telling her. And when I got selected, and breaking the news to her, we're already having problems. It just reinforced more problems going on, because now I got to do training, this, and this. But I believe it has made us stronger and brought us closer together, this actual row.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's good. Hey, I'm going to ask you about families. I have one more question. We'll take a break. Michael, what about your family? Were they involved?
Oh, yeah, me, Chris, yeah.
Yeah, I'm so, sorry, Chris. Yeah. Yeah, okay. You guys look alike. I can't see you.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, I got a text from a friend who is also in Corsa Racing, who sends me goofy stuff all the time. And I got a text and ignored it. And then he called me later that night after he got done with work, and he's like, what do you think? And I'm like, well, yeah, it looks cool, man. And so he forced me to actually look at this, you know, this message, and it was the World's Toughest Row website. And I had him on speaker, my wife standing right there in the living room. And he's like, so what do you think? You want to do it with me? And my wife, you know, mouths say yes, you know, in the background. And so I just said yes. And I don't think either of us really knew totally what we were getting into. Fundraising, you know, the stress of trying to raise enough money for all this. And then training, like Mike said, you know, we'd be gone every month for about 10 days to get training in. And then even, you know, financially having to save enough money to get everyone to Hawaii and then be on the other side when I land, you know, all stressful things. But during the journey, she helped run the, you know, the organization's Instagram. And so she was very involved in that. And then we got across the finish line, her and my three kids were there, and it was just, they got to see how much skinnier I got. And, you know, I'm wobbly from my sea legs and I'm crying. Like this Green Beret who I've never seen cry in his whole life is boohooing on the beach of, Kauai.
Hawaii.
They loved it. And, obviously she's fully supportive because it's helped me and it's helping others. She comes from a humanitarian background professionally. So she's all for, this kind of thing.
Well, there's nothing like a military spouse. I mean, military spouses are tough, and they just, I don't think I could have ever gotten through the Army without my wife. And I've been married a long time. So, hey, before we take another break, I'd like to ask each one of you, how did pushing beyond your physical limits just accomplish this huge mission, change your lives? And I'm not going to screw it up this time. Michael, how did it change your life?
Well, as I said, Sergeant Major, for like the last 3 months, I feel like we've been rock stars, at least me and Chris, jumping around from podcast to podcast and trying to get the thank yous out to different organizations that helped us along the way. But the biggest thing for changing my life is stepping away from Rangers Row, starting my own foundation, to continue helping veterans and, like I said, expanding it to the first responder community. It's not going away. And as I tell everyone, the only way we're going to win the fight is through education, different programs, and your donations or sponsorships.
Yeah.
And that's the truth behind it.
Yeah. I think the other way to win a fight is stick together. Stick together and talk to each other. The problem you have is we don't talk to each other. We get out, we retire, we get out by ourselves, and we think, well, I've did this all my life. I manage it by myself. I'll do it again. Well, guess what? There's some things you can't manage. But that's why I always say it's therapy to talk to other veterans. Same question, Chris. How about yourself?
Yeah, to your last point, community is super important. And I built a whole new community and got people added onto it. You know, me and Mike, we lived in the same town, hardly saw each other before the row, except for, every couple of days. Maybe, I don't know, Mike, I want to say like 4 or 5 days prior to the row in that year, we actually hung out in Clarksville. And, now we're at the gym working out every morning.
Texting each other at least half a dozen times.
I got to tell you about my workout. I work out every day. I do 1 hour. I go to the gym, walk 5 miles, or play 4 hours of golf. That's my prime. I'm going to stick to that program forever. Say, hey, we need to take it.
There you go.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
There you go. Oh, no, I was saying.
I love golf. I'm not a very good golfer, but the other thing about it, I think that veterans need to find some way to release that stress, whether or not it's running, exercising, talking to other people. Because, again, when you sit alone by yourself, you said it, Michael, when you sit alone by yourself, you start thinking about stuff, thinking about places you've been, things you've seen, things you don't want to see anymore. And it really wears on you a little bit. So that, rowing a boat or talking to somebody, that's for me, it's always a form of therapy. We need to take another quick break. When you come back, I want to learn more about the work you're doing with your nonprofit organization, because I know you guys are really doing some incredible things. And I think the audience needs to learn about those kind of things you're doing. But you got to wait right there. I'm going to be right back. Now, here's a word for one more of the organizations that help make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Well, Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Michael Kendall, president and founder of No One Fights Alone, a foundation and a master sergeant retired from the United States Army, and Christopher Farrington, a chief operating officer from the Courser Racing Foundation and a sergeant first class retired from the United States Army. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you. And we want to address each and every one, just like we're talking to Chris and Michael here today. So please, as I said many times, reach out to me. Tell me what topics you'd like us to cover on the show. You can call at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Hey, Chris, tell us about the Courser Racing. I messed it up. That's why I'm going to make sure I emphasize that every day. Why was it started in its mission? What's on the horizon for the Courser Racing team?
Yeah, you know, we started 2 years ago, and as we've gone through the years, it's basically morphed into adventure therapy for veterans that are struggling. There's a lot of statistics that are out there about how much, you know, adventure therapy can help anyone who's struggling through PTSD or, you know, TBI or any kind of these traumatic events that they've been through in their lives. And we know that adventure therapy is not the end all be all, and it's not going to, you know, stop veteran suicide, but we do know that we have something here that can help and help take a chunk out of that that number that comes out every day. So we run three programs. You know, we have the Weekend Warrior package, we have a 3 to 5 day package, and then if you're crazy enough, we'll send you across the ocean with the world's toughest row so that you can complete the same journey. Yeah, there you go, Sergeant Major. Yeah. You're on it. You just volunteered.
No, I didn't volunteer. Well, I go back. I think the biggest problem with veterans, all veterans, is they need to tell their story. Whatever their issues are, they need to be open about it, because both you guys, just like me, was taught all the time. I stayed a little bit longer than you did in the military, but you're taught to sort of keep things to yourself. Mm-hmm. And not talk about those issues. And I don't know if I told you guys, but I struggled when I come back out of war for about 2 or 3 years. I had a lot of issues, but I was able to work out them. But I think the one thing that helps me a great deal is I'm real open. I talk about it all the time. And it, you know, I don't know if it helps. I hope it helps, but it seemed like it helps me a little bit. So I think that's what we got to do. Got to help. And the other thing we got to do to veterans is listen to what they say.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes you're talking and listen, whether or not you think it's important or not, listen to their comments, good or bad, and just listen and just tell them you're there for them and be honest. And then the last thing I'll tell you is if you see a veteran that's struggling and you know a struggle, be point blank. Ask him, hey, look, what do you need? What's going on? I'm here to help you. And let them know that you care about them and their family or whatever's going on. So I think it's I think we can do a lot together. But I think we got to pull together a little bit more.
Sure.
Michael, how about the same question? How about No One Fights Alone Foundation? Tell me a little bit about your foundation. Oh, tell me a lot about your foundation.
All right. So at No One Fights Alone, we plan on going active October 1st. We're so close right now, finalizing everything with our website, our collaborators, and just like Chris, we plan on doing adventure retreats. Our plan is our first big retreat is going to be third quarter of next year, which is going to be May. We were looking at the rim to rim, but with all the major in Arizona, but with all the major fires this past year, it's been put on the back burner until fall of next year. So we're going to be hosting our first 7-day retreat in North Carolina. We're going to do somatic healing along with a final 48-hour, 25-mile hike. It's not going to be anything super strenuous, but it's going to be something that when you do get done, something you can look back and reflect on. We're also looking at taking some first responders and veterans and putting them through some triathlons that are going on around the United States and collaborating with some other foundations to help veterans and first responders with different programs.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, you guys are clicking, doing a lot of good stuff. Hey, if someone needs to help or wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to, you know, to get in contact with you? Is there a website and a phone number? Chris, I'll get you website or phone number.
Yeah, so you can reach out through www.courseracing.com. Or sorry, dart dot. Can I redo that? My bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Do it any way you want to do it.
.com, now we're .org. All right. Sure, you can reach out through www.courseracing.org. And that's one of the ways you can reach out to us. Or you can reach out to us on Instagram. Or you can go to me direct. My email is directly on that website. We are on the computer constantly these days, which, you know, is good and bad. It's the best way to reach out to us.
There you go. Hey, is there a phone number for old guys like me? I always call. Is there a phone number?
Well, Sergeant Major, I can give you mine, but I'm not going to give you my personal one.
Never mind. Okay. Hey, Mike, how about yourself? What's the best way to get a hold of you? I guess evidently you don't have a phone number, but if you got a website
number,
or something, go ahead.
You can go to www.nfa.org, and all the information along with our upcoming retreats are already posted on the website or Instagram and Facebook. You can find us and send us messages through there.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny as you tell all this stuff. A lot of people have coming to shows. I'm an old guy, so I like picking up the phone and calling, but maybe phones in another 10 years will be obsolete. I don't know. Hey, this probably will for me. Hey, there's been a great discussion. And I got to tell you, my hat's off to you. What you guys are doing is you're making a difference. And so I appreciate what you're doing. If we can ever help you anyway, please let us know. Any final thoughts? Anything that you know, that you might have missed or you don't want to share with the audience? And, we'll start with Chris. We'll start with you. So we'll start with you again here. Chris, go ahead. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, just for any veteran watching this, just know that you're not alone. You need to reach out. And if there's no one to reach out to, get out and find you a community. Find a hobby. Find something that you like. And then build a community and get great people around you who will love and care about you. As a veteran, just know other veterans love you. They may not know you, but they love you. So reach out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Michael, about yourself, any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience?
Again, if whether you're a veteran or a first responder and you're just not feeling right, reach out, talk to somebody, seek the help. The biggest thing is don't be embarrassed. That's the biggest stigma. As you know, Sergeant Major, from our days, you never talked about problems because, you know, as Chris knows, they'll throw you off the team or stick you on the B team. Nobody wants to be junior varsity. We all want to be varsity. Get that help that you need. There's plenty of organizations and help that you can seek at your fingertips.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think if you tell them you got a chink in your army, they're going to push you off the side. It's going to affect your promotion or going to affect the job. It's not going to affect. It just tells people more about you. And I think that times like that are sort of behind us now. So people want you to open up and they want you to tell them the real deal. What's going on in your life? How can I help? How can I make it better for you? Hey, thanks again for coming on the show. It's been certainly very informative. I've decided during the show that just to let you know, I don't want to row 2,800 miles. I'm convinced right now I'm never going to do it. Especially when you start talking about the poop over ship. That's the end of that now. But again, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks, Sergeant Major.
Thank you for having us, Sergeant Major.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks again to Michael Kendall of No One Fights Alone Foundation, Chris Verrington of Courser Racing Foundation for being with us. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major. I mean, you've been enjoying your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org. And while you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military and Upline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job in real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages. Never thought I'd say this, but I'm gonna. Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and I guess Rumble. And if you like what we're doing at Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Michael and Chris for joining us. These are two warriors that did so much for our country and are still doing a lot for our country. And today, I talked to two guys that, just what I said a minute ago, that did a lot for our country, you know, about protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, but they're soldiers, they're fathers, they're family members, they've got kids, and they have a life that they got to take care of. They got people they got to take care of, but they're also concerned about our veteran community, to making sure that you have a life, that you don't sit on that couch and think about the things that went wrong in the military, that the things that you can't fix. Remember, I think Chris said it, we love you. We want to take care of you. We want to make sure that you have a solid life. So get involved with their foundation or any other foundation. Tell your story. Tell people what's going on. Tell them what's going on. You are not alone. We're together and we'll always be together. We have a special bond that'll keep us together for the rest of our lives. Thank you for watching. And thanks to Newmind Studios, and of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. As always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.